Nikki.
I'm Becca, and I sound so lackluster.
This is the Grim Reader podcast, where we talk about books by showing each other a book and getting the other person to guess the book and always being horrifically wrong and then telling them how wrong they are by giving a book review.
We really need to cut that down.
That's so long. So, Becca, what do we do? We show each other a book.
No.
We guess what it's about. We get it wrong. We review.
We get the other person to judge the book by the front cover, and then we do the book review. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, she has it summarized, bitch.
Nikki's just like, let me ramble.
I like talking, actually. Oh, my God. As a podcaster, I value my own voice.
Can we actually call ourselves podcasters after like going on like a 7-month hiatus?
Well, in fairness, how many episodes do we have? We have like over 50. I think we can. So, Will Smith punching Chris Rock, huh?
You know, we discussed what we're going to talk about, and that did not come up. So.
No, but like, I think when you look at this podcast as a time capsule, the first week of April this year, that's all we've talked about. That's this week of 2022. Forget the war. all that's going on is Will Smith.
To be honest, I'm kind of, well, one, this podcast is definitely not coming out in April, like, but
Time capsule. Two,
I'm kind of, I mean, I actually had a student on Monday who came in and we actually had a really, not a long conversation about it, but like he actually brought it up and kind of, I think it was kind of him trying to see, kind of get his feelings across, which I thought was really important because, I mean, I've taught him now for 3 years and, you know, us discussing it. And I was like, look, violence is not the answer. And, you know, it was really shocking, but I think there's a lot more important things going on in the world that need our focus rather than this.
Well, and then like everyone like this week is like, oh, he's resigned from the Academy. He's such a gentleman. It's like, no. He punched someone last week and he's feeling bad. Like, it's just, you just don't punch people. That's
well, it was a slap, but
you don't slap people either, Becca.
That's what I was just saying. You don't slap people.
Exactly. Like, why are we talking about all these rich people when there's oh my God, there's so much more going on in the world today.
Honestly, it's horrifying what's going on in the world. And then you're like, this is getting all of the attention. And I mean, fine, if you want to get into the Oscars, absolutely, sorry, rant coming. But there were some really positives from that night, do you know? The second Latina woman ever winning an Oscar, do you know? And then that she is a queer person as well, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of gets brushed over. Was it the second ever deaf person winning an Oscar?
Yeah.
That gets kind of brushed over. Do you know, there was these kind of really monumental things happening. And then this one moment completely just dominates.
What I was, another bit of positive info, like Chris Rock like sold out all his gigs. And good for him. He got the bag.
Well, what he did wasn't right either.
So I think there is a line with jokes. But I think the Oscars hired him. I think it's on the Oscars. I genuinely think it's on the Oscars.
Okay. You know, neither was right. Neither was
no.
right.
No.
But violence wasn't the option.
Oh my God, it just wasn't. No. It just wasn't.
But to our own lives, we were like, we're going to record at 9. Nikki sent a message. We're like, not sleeping well. We decided we're going to record at 10. Then
I was like, I got to do my hair. It's going to be 10:15.
Then when Nikki logs in, I was on the FaceTime with my boyfriend. So I was like, oh, say hi to Nikki, blah, blah. And then we find out Nikki's mic, very, very expensive mic, isn't working.
My SM58. Like, oh my God, if you have that mic at home, this should inspire fear. Like, oh my God, when my mic wasn't working, I was sitting there and I was like, this isn't good. Like, this isn't good. This isn't good. This isn't good.
Oh, girl, and if it was any other mic, bad.
And if it was any other mic, I would have just gone, oh, Becca, I'll switch to my headphone audio. We'll just record. But I was like, oh my God, this mic cost me 500 euro. It's not fucking working. SM58 owners, please cherish your Fed amps. And don't forget to plug them in because the mic does not work without it.
Oh, it does not.
It took me so long to realize that's what the problem was. And like, I've diagnosed that problem with people who have that mic on Zoom for singing lessons. And I've been like, oh, you don't have a Fed amp, you idiot. That's me this morning. Oh my God, what a finicky mic. Why isn't it built in? But anyway,
there's definitely
a tech related answer to that. And it's probably really obvious why it's not built in. But anyway,
we better not get like messages schooling us on like you proper mic usage.
Have you ever seen that TikTok? And it's like, do you know the way sound engineers, sorry, this is like peak, like niche musician, like we're getting into like, we're about to exclude some people, but do just laugh along.
Who doesn't know anything about sound engineering.
Do you know when you're all like all the sound engineers and all the like Instagram guitarists and all the people really into tech equipment are always like, oh my God, you music theory nerds. Oh my God, is that like an E sharp 11? And then it's this TikTok and he's mocking them. And then he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to plug into my Fed amp with wattage. And he starts trickling like the same way we trickle off like all this nonsensical like music theory. They do the exact same thing with sound science. Pretentiousness has two lanes. It lives in both.
Yeah.
Oh, so funny. I will send Becca that the particular TikTok to post on our Instagram highlights.
Yeah. I will.
It'll be there.
Put it there. I love how Nikki also has the login for that Instagram. It's like, no.
I will send it to Becca.
She'll do it. Yes. But yeah. So my news of the week is that I'm after reading this really good, really, really good book, nonfiction, Any Girl by Mia Doring. Now, I could be pronouncing her surname incorrectly. I should have looked that up. But it is one I'm not sure I want to cover on the podcast. It is one I would like to cover, but it's one that is, I just don't think I'd be able to do it justice because it is a very powerful book. One that I would not be getting you to guess. Because I don't think it would be respectful. But it was just, it's one that I think is very emotional and I think needs to be read by a lot of people.
And I think you should cover it. I was saying to Becca, we'll have a nonfiction episode. It's been decided now. It has been decreed. Okay. We will have a nonfiction episode where we don't guess. We just fangirl about our two fave nonfiction books. And it'll be a different ep. It'll be just go read this. It won't be, there'll be no goofing.
No goofing,
no scheming.
Yeah. So I'm just, I don't know, there's just sometimes when you read a book and you're like, I always think now that I've got this like evaluation in my head at the end of like, could I cover this on the podcast? And sometimes when they're really crap, I'm like, absolutely not.
Oh, I know. And sometimes it's just not your cup of tea book. Yeah. And you can tell other people would love it. And even though I just want to fucking bitch and moan, I'm like, no.
Oh, sometimes when I did Femlandia, I was like,
oh, Femlandia needed to be like buried in the dirt.
It's like, let me go off on one. But
Father, may I please go off on one?
But I think this book, it's one I probably will reread because I think, I don't know, I just think it's one that'll stay with me. But it's just one that I think there needs to be much more conversation around. So anyway, apologies, getting all
Conversations
like,
with Friends by Sally Rooney.
getting really, you know, not deep there, but like just, you know, chatting about feelings and books, and actually speaking of Sally Rooney, I picked up a secondhand copy of Normal People that I must read at some point.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Yeah. I think you'll like it because Sally Rooney's just a great author. Mm. Even if the story isn't your cup of tea, you'll just read it
This is the book my friend told me never to read Sally Rooney because of this book.
And she's just wrong. She's just objectively, she's wrong. I read Conversations with Friends and I loved it. I read Normal People and I was like, oh, I don't like it as much. But like, you'll read it so fast because Sally Rooney is a gift.
We shall see.
There's no overrating her. She's just a queen.
So anyway, shall we get into books?
Yes, it's my turn to go first. And I'm so excited about this one because I think like, so I was in Hodges and Figgis.
I honestly don't know.
I went up to see the Museum of Literature for the James Joyce, since it's the centenary year of Ulysses, and I'm not brave enough to read Ulysses yet, but I did enjoy very much learning about it. And we went into Hodges and Figgis because you kind of have to when you're in Dublin, all the bookshops are like, just, you could just do all the bookshops in Dublin in like 2 hours. They're all, well, not if you linger in the bookshops, but if you just want to see them, like you could do them all within an hour. They're so, everything's like so close. Winding Stairs, Hodges and Figgis Chapters is reopened.
I know. Oh, congrats to them.
I know, fab news. But this book was on the shelf and I had told myself I wouldn't buy another book because I bought Nora by Nuala O'Connor and I was like, that's my Dublin book. But this, it's just, I'm going to show Becca the cover. It's so good. The cover is just like the most gorgeous, gorgeous thing. Okay, it has been sent. It's kind of like the book I did from you last week, Mungo, Young Mungo. Oh. It's that kind of a cover. It's so good.
Yeah, no, it is. It's okay. So this is New Animal by Ella Baxter. And I will say that I did request this on NetGalley. I did get it on NetGalley, but I have not read it. And I shall steal Nikki's review to post on NetGalley. and NetGalley, they'll never listen to this. But don't sue me.
I love the way it's like NetGalley or like a specific like bunch of lawyers, like they're just like, there's five of them in suits and we hope those five people will never listen to the podcast.
Yeah, to be fair, that's kind of honest.
Yeah,
but it's a really striking cover and I have seen the Salash everywhere, but when I knew that you read it, I was like, okay, strike.
Yeah, I
actually
picked it up on publication day. I didn't realize that. I picked it up the day it was published.
This is pretty much a photo, but it's like zoomed in, like taking a really close angle of, I'm going to say a young girl. She's got her hand leaning on her chin and it is pretty much from her, just the bottom of her nose really to her chin is all we see with her hand. Her lips, I think like the lips are so striking because she's got a really pale face that the lips are kind of like bitten red in the middle.
Yeah, they're a bit bruised.
So New Animal by Ella Baxter, which again, with the writing then, New Animal's in white, Ella Baxter's in pink. And
we have that
says,
like aesthetic no caps look.
It's really nice.
There's something so good about no caps.
All it says, she's given me a hint. She's left in a review by the Sydney Morning Herald. I actually took out any information from mine. Ella Baxter's debut novel is drenched in sex and death. There's also much love.
I just loved the review too much. I couldn't take it out.
Okay. This is kind of leaving me a little bit battled because I think if you hadn't left the review, and I think I would have gone for a different angle.
Oh,
I think I would have gone for a different angle. So now I'm a little bit torn. I'm like, should I just ignore that?
I think ignore it. I think go with God.
Go with God.
Oh. That's my new saying. I'm like, oh my God, go with God, queen.
Oh. But the blasphemy. So
it's even funnier when go with God means like a hookup with like seven people or something. Just go with God. Just let it happen, queen, dude, bitch.
That's just reminding me. I was watching Fleabag clips last night on YouTube. And she's in the one with the therapist. She's like, do you want to fuck the priest or do you want to fuck God? And she's like, are you able to fuck God? And she's like, oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
What a genius show. Okay, girl, we could go off on Fleabag for 7 hours.
But we're
going to
do New Animal. And now that I've got Fleabag, I'm just like, should I make this Fleabag inspired? But it would never be as good. So, okay, I'm going to say that this is... Okay, we're looking at a girl going off to college. And I'm going to say that she is one of the first people in her family to go to college. I'm going to say it's in the UK. I think she's from Bristol or something like that. She's from Bristol. Yeah, we've seen Bristol.
From Bristol.
Never been to Bristol. Don't know much about it, but we're going with that. And I'm going to say that her family... Nothing much has been expected of her, really. Like, she's really bright. Her dad is one of those that makes jokes of kind of like, oh, you know, where did she come from? Like, as in, like, I don't believe that this child is mine. And there's, we actually see as the book goes on that he's not really joking about that. He actually doesn't think that she is his daughter. And that, like, leads to a very strained relationship between the two of them. And I'm going to say that she has much younger siblings, and her mom isn't really in the picture. I think there's like maybe some addict issues there. So it's kind of more of a single father raising them while her mother, they try to get help for her mother. And, you know, because she's the eldest, it's very strained. And then you have this whole kind of like paternity question around it as well. So she's heading off to college, and I'm going to say that she is going to, waiting for divine inspiration. You told me to go with God, and God's like,
with God, go with God, bitch.
Not going to help you. So, okay, I actually, can you suggest a UK university? Because I'm not. You're blank as well. Great.
Oxford.
I don't really want her going. Okay, we'll go with Oxford. That wasn't my plan, but okay.
Raise your pinkies up, bitch.
She's going to Oxford. And so, again, this is another cause of like issue or strain with her dad, because now he's like, okay, she's becoming elitist. Like, she's going off to one of the top colleges in the world. And
the trinification of it all.
Oh, damn, she went there. So anyway, she arrives at college and completely different world. And she doesn't fit in here either. I think she had these dreams of like, I'm going to become a new person, i.e. new animal, new person when she went off to college. And it's completely different world. And she feels really lost. And I'm going to say that she ends up kind of, someone seeks out her vulnerabilities. Let's just say this. One of the really rich guys, completely pompous, up himself, like horrible. And we see that, but she's viewing this as an olive branch to finally fit into this society here. Again, if somebody who went to Oxford is listening to this and was like, that wasn't my college experience, this is completely fabricated. Okay?
This is us as lowly peasants looking at your lives and assuming.
Let's not say that. But anyway, so I'm going to say that this relationship, kind of, he is a really negative influence, and he kind of gets her in, becomes very controlling, very abusive, and it's a very much, you know, she gets involved, you know, she starts taking, you know, some drugs, and obviously there's a lot of sex. So we're seeing the bruising of like, he's actually bitten her on the lips, do you know? And he's like, you know, it's just a love bite. And she's like, so she's questioning a lot of things and she doesn't have that much experience with it. So I think, you know, this kind of is all spiraling, like she's doing really badly. She looks like she could be kicked out of college. And I think we get to this kind of middle point in the book, or like towards the end, or no, kind of maybe three quarters way through, and her mother actually dies from an overdose. And this is like her wake up call of like, I think her dad actually sits her down and is like, you need to cop on. You know, you are repeating a lot of the mistakes your mom made, and I'm not watching second time round. You know, and it's kind of, we see this point of like how much guilt that he was putting on himself for what his wife went through. Do you know that he felt like he didn't step up enough, and something that this girl had never even thought about. And, you know, that maybe a lot of his insecurities came from this guilt, you know. So he pretty much is like, it's quitting. So the next kind of book is, the next part is actually us realizing that she's kind of, she views it as like a rebirth of like her challenging herself to get sober and quit it. And, you know, I think her dad actually goes to the trouble of actually organizing a meeting with the head of the college, or, you know, whoever, to actually get a year, you know, that she, a year to recover, really. And they don't want to do it because they're like, look, they view it as like, we gave a chance to this girl from a, you know, broken background, all that kind of stuff, and she blew it. And her dad's there like, actually, one of your elitist, stuck up, rich boy assholes got my daughter into this life. And he's like, and I think he goes on like,
and like he's on a pedestal, and
he's on a pedestal, and he's like, if anyone should be broke, kicked out, it's like this guy. He is the center of a drug ring in this college. Like, for God knows all we know, like, he
could. Dad brought the receipts.
So I think he pretty much is like forcing the college to do this, and he's like, otherwise I'm gonna make this national news. And basically like, this will not want anything like that. So I think we get glimpses of her recovery, but I think it's kind of something that I don't know, is this kind of told in like her maybe saying that she doesn't want to discuss it, that it was really hard. But we meet her again on her first day of college again, and I don't know, does she actually stay in Oxford? I think maybe that she switches to a different university, kind of saying that maybe her aspirations in life, she just picked Oxford because she wanted to get really far away from her family, that she didn't actually pick it because it was the right place for her.
Oh, so, maybe she goes to like Berlin and does art or like something, yeah, like really, know, just I her.
She goes for somewhere different. And I'm going to say that, you know, at the end, we don't really know, does, you know, the strain between her father, like, it is better, but, you know, is, are there issues there still? Because, I mean, not everything gets resolved. You know, but I wonder, is it kind of her feeling like she is a new person, like a new animal at the end of it? Do you know?
Okay. So, nice. Very like dark academia kind of vibes, like vibes. I love it. I'd read that book. That's definitely something that would be on my shelf. Like, I'd pick that up.
That's why I also guess like that, because I'm like, I know what Nikki reads.
You got one major, you got one major detail like bang on. So I'll jump into this. Okay.
Hey, this is Eddie and Becca just jumping in to say that the following book that we're going to be discussing has quite a few topics that we think could be very harmful for some people. So a few content warnings about New Animal by Ella Baxter. There is a mention of suicide, death, mental health issues, BDSM, sexual kind of talk. So for those that would feel more comfortable, please feel free to skip ahead. We start discussing The Library by Bella Osborne at around 35 minutes.
So this is New Animal by Ella Baxter. And this, for anyone that doesn't listen to the podcast, this is the bit where I actually tell you what happens in the book.
Yes.
We're out of dreamland now.
So, we're out of the fabrication reality that I create.
Fabricated improvisation of the Grim Reader podcast. Yes. So, New Animal by Ella Baxter. I'm going to begin this with major content warnings.
Okay.
Similarly to when I read Animal by Lisa Tadeo, it's really weird how I like the name.
Okay.
Yeah, there now, Animal is a lot more graphic. If you were okay, if you were able to read Animal, you'll be fine here. But if the themes of sexual abuse No. Just vulnerability in general. I'm trying to remember. I think there's a mention of animal abuse and anything of that nature. And there's a big kind of really, now the BDSM community have kind of spoken up about this, because it's not all of this is an accurate depiction of BDSM, but that the murky side of what can happen in that community has been brought to the forefront of this book. So just big content warnings for it. It's not the book for everyone. It is quite heavy. So New Animal by Ella Baxter. I want to tell you what the idea of New Animal, like where the title comes from. Mm-hmm. It's not from her having a rebirth, unfortunately. Okay. So this is a direct quote from the book. It's also on the back of the book. This is like, it gives you the overall insight of the character that you're about to deal with. So most nights I find myself trying to, Most nights I find myself trying to combine with someone else to become this two-headed thing with flailing limbs, champing teeth and tangled hair, this new animal. Mm. So we're dealing with kind of one of those really familiar contemporary characters where it's a young woman. She's thrown herself into sex, and it's become a vital part of her life, to the fact that it's almost morbid. And the way that like it describes it in this really good article by Sarah Dittum on The Guardian is, Sarah Dittum words it that she has outrageous sex to swallow her ineffable sadness. Also, one thing to bring up on the Sarah Dittum review is, I hate when people compare new female authors to Sally Rooney. And look, I get it, but like, I don't like it. I think this is a very, like, this isn't really a Sally Rooney book. This is a very Lisa Tadeo. Like, okay, that's the vibe. It does. It's not always fucking, it's not always Sally Rooney.
I just think there's like, okay, what author can I compare every female writer to?
I know. Sally and Rooney. It's like, oh, the dislikable, slightly twisted protagonist, Sally Rooney. It's like, no, it's really not a Sally Rooney book. That's a really bizarre comparison. So we meet our protagonist. Her name's Amelia, and her second name is Aurelia, I think. Amelia Aurelia, because she takes her biological dad's second name later on in the story. So when we first meet her, she is with a man in bed. She is like, it's written so crudely and disgustingly that like she is just disassociated from the sex they're having, and she's having it for this really, you can already tell that there's a disconnect to why she does this, because the way it's written, it just sounds like the most like awful thing. It's very like friends and sex. It's just not hot. And, she asks the man and basically puts him under pressure to say, I will ruin you during sex with him. And he's really weirded out. He's like, what the fuck's this? They finish up. She asks him to leave. And the second he leaves, she's on another dating app looking for someone else. So really, okay, like this poor girl, immediately, it's just really, really sad. We find out then that she actually works as a mortician. She's a makeup artist in a family-owned mortuary. So this is the other side of this book. This is like it's kind of viewed a little bit like a dark comedy, because some of it is just a bit bizarre. Like the whole family owns this mortuary. Her brothers work there. Her mom's new partner, who's really, oh, he's really lovely. And like her mom. And it's all a bit bizarre. They're making quips that are like, oh, who's the new guy, whatever, because they don't realize the extent to her sadness and why she's hooking up with so many people, but they know she's doing it. So we then learn that recently she is dealing with the loss of a friend who dies by suicide. And she is really, really, really struggling. And to work in the field of death and try and make peace with a really like a death as like personal and difficult mm-hmm. and sudden as she's experienced is obviously taking its toll on her. She's very, very like the bits where the author writes about Amelia's experience with dealing with the deceased is amazing, because she is very, very passionate about her job. She really believes in giving people a right send off, and all of those sections are beautiful. And the kick to this book, it all sets off when Amelia's mother dies very unexpectedly. While Amelia is at a hookup, she finds out that her mother has fallen down the stairs, I think.
No. And
oh, I know. It is. Oh, my God. And you're only like 40 pages in and your whole heart breaks.
Oh, Jesus.
This is a very short book. This book is just above the 200 page mark.
Dark.
It is so sad. And it's written with such impact. Everything is so raw that like you are just feeling for this poor girl. And she realizes pretty quickly that this is going to break her. This is her. She can't deal with this. And she decides that she just can't go to the funeral. And she gets on a plane and she flies to Tasmania, to where her birth father, who she doesn't really have contact anymore, is living. And she tells him, and they have this very disconnected, but there is a love there, but they're very disconnected. They're very different people at this point, relationship. And he's not going to the funeral. She's not going to the funeral. Her brothers and her stepdad are heartbroken with her. And they're also devastated by this loss, so they're ringing her and like giving her abuse down the phone. They're like, how could you do this? Like, how could you not be with the family? Like, this, like, you're going over to that asshole who deserted you and you're not here with your family, like helping send off your mother. And then there's this amazing, like, there's just this amazing reality of like how good she was for taking care of the deceased and how good she could do that for her mother, and she can't be there. So she totally disconnects. And unfortunately, like, there's a line where she's going and she decides that I'm going to have a wonderfully shocking time, is what she says. And the wonderful, it's not wonderful, it's completely shocking. She meets up with a guy on a dating app when she gets to Tasmania, who is a self-confessed sadist, and he brings her to an underground BDSM club, and she has an awful time. Because he is, and then she kind of falls into the circuit of the BDSM club, and they're kind of like, he's bad news. Like, he's not in this. He is in it for the wrong reasons. He's a nut job.
But why hasn't he been banned from the BDSM club?
And it's so sad. She has this awful experience with him where he's just hurting her, and she realizes that this pain doesn't resolve. And there's this quote, she says it doesn't resolve her mother-shaped wound. And it's, oh God, it's so sad. And now this is the part of the book where I got lost for a while, and I just got very uncomfortable. The book goes really, really far with poor Amelia. Like, she really suffers a break, and her actions are deplorable. Like, oh my God, they're really hard to read. At times I wondered, did Ella Baxter go too far for shock value? Or is this, like, to be honest, with all the character was dealing with, I was like, oh my God, maybe, like, I don't know. Like, this could, like, this poor girl. Oh my God.
Can you give me an example and I can, like, edit it out? Because I'm like,
editing Becca has been scared and has edited this chunk out, because I've just given Becca major spoilers to how bad and how heavy and visceral this book is. Any thoughts, Becca?
I'm just shocked. Like, that, I mean, from what you're telling me, that just sounds like someone who's very, very, very unwell.
Yeah, and that's been the criticism of this book. People basically, the content warning here is like, she does get it does paint BDSM in somewhat of a bad light, because it shows a non-consensual side to it, and the character takes part in that as an instigator, really. And it's really horrible to read. It's really, really difficult. And the main takeaway from this book is that, like, the BDSM community know what Amelia is going through, that her mother has died, and they're kind of like, that is not someone who consents, who can consent. That's someone at a breaking point, that none of that should have happened. So unfortunately, this book, it does take a really dark turn. But so the kind of fourth, the final, like, basically the middle third of the book really lost me a bit. I was kind of going, oh my god, when is this going to get better? And when the book is only 200 pages long, I thought it had lost me entirely. I was like, oh my god, this is too bleak, this is too dark. But there are such beautiful moments littered through as she starts to deal with her mother's death. I want to read out one of the quotes. Now, this is quite early on.
Okay.
But oh my god, I highlighted it because I was like, this
being
is
like, you should cute. Never do that to a
oh,
book.
Oh, I know. Okay. I've started annotating my books. I really like it because I love going back at a glance and seeing all my favorite bits. So I'm also gonna read out the very last line for Becca, but I'm gonna read out quite an early part of the book. It's on page 44. This is when she goes to visit her mother in the hospital when she's dying. I look at my mother. I can feel her tugging at the invisible line between us, yanking it from afar, the umbilical cord. I plug my belly button with my finger. I miss her and I need her, and she's me, or a part of me at least, and I haven't fully absorbed her yet. I haven't gleaned all the womanness from her, which is what a daughter does. Whose daughter am I now? Where has she gone?
Oh
god, it's divine. It's so divine. The ending that I also read for Becca that isn't in this episode is, oh my god, it's beautiful. It's so divine. It makes all of the darkness worth it because you just get this glimpse of light like no other book I've read before. It's, oh my god, what a book. It's so good. It's so, so good.
What would you give it out of 10? Because I'm like so curious.
I know point. Now I have to take it away for the wild, bloody, pretending to be a horse sex that occurs halfway through this book. Like, that's the best way I can describe it. I have to take a little bit away because I felt like it just went too far. And I don't know if it needed. It's kind of one of those things when it's like, do you need to say it to show it? You know, but I think ultimately this book affected me more than any other. So I have to give it about a 9. Because okay. I was so emotional at the end of this book. I just thought it was like, I really, really want a brighter book from Ella Baxter because she's so capable of it. Even without the context of how dark this goes, it's not like the light looks brighter because of how murky this book gets. It's just, some of her writing is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. So I give this book a 9 out of 10, but I would massive content warnings. Like, this needs a content warning on the very front.
We've spoken about content warnings so much. Like, they just my need god to be there.
It's just criminal that someone could pick this up and like see the things that they will see with no prior indication, because this is fucking dark. Like, but it's very, very good.
Right, we're going to get into my book, which is thank God I picked a happy book for once. Because, like, dear
I told Jesus, you I'd do a dark book this week.
You told me that ages ago. How was I supposed to remember that? Right, here is my one. And I've blocked out quite a lot of, like, anything that tells you anything. So off we go.
Oh, this is a very cute cover compared to mine.
It is. Okay. Prefaces. This is a NetGalley book. I have not been paid to talk about this book. This is honest, unbiased. Off we go.
We live. Okay. This is The Library by Bella Osborne. It's the very millennial lack of outline, color splotching style of cover. So there's a big stack of books. They're all you've got like red, blue, orange, green, kind of as color scheme of pictures, and there's a pair of glasses on the top and some earphones. And I have to say, to be honest, I don't know if I'd pick up this book. I think the colors are a little bit like, this, it's not really sticking out to me. It's a bit boring for a book cover. So The Library by Bella Osborne. Now, I'm thinking from the glasses on the very top, they look like men's glasses. They're the like typical shape of men's glasses, I would say. Now, if you have these glasses, no tea, no shade. But like, I just, this is like when I picture like in like non-playable character, he's a man with glasses. These are the exact glasses they're wearing. They're just like very bland.
At these glasses again. I didn't think that.
They're the thinner frame.
Yeah.
That, yeah. Do you get me?
They look like just my dad's glasses.
Yeah, that's it. They're dad glasses. That's it. We've also got headphones at the bottom. And I'm going to be totally assumptuous and say that it's a young person. Because there's earphones. That's such a bad thing to say, but it is. That's the way the marketing wizards want us to deal with life, that young people listen to music. So I think the main character of this, I reckon, is a socially awkward man. I think his name is something, like, I think his whole life he's felt a little bit unexceptional. Like, he has friends. He has a couple of close friends. He's not particularly social in that, like, he has loads and loads of friends, but he has about like a close select of two or three that he talks to. He's got a normal relationship with his mom and his dad, but nothing's really happened yet. Like, he's a bookworm. He reads all these grand novels of like people's lives beginning, people's lives ending, all of these massive events. And I think there's like that deep wonder in him of like, what would they write about for my life? Nothing's really happened. So I think his name is, I want to say it's Paul. I think he's really nice. I think he's very introverted and a bit awkward, and he says the wrong thing sometimes, but he really does mean well. And I think he goes to the library every day. He's studying in college. I'd say he's studying English literature, and he doesn't really have he doesn't believe in himself that he could ever write the next novel. He's always thought that he's going to work in like novel reviews, maybe in copywriting. He's never really thought he's had anything exceptional about him. So he lives his life feeling like he's just watching through the window, and in his studies in the library, he gets used to seeing people pass through. There's, because he's in a university, there's like all these really eccentric people that might only go into the library the once, and they're coming in and they have like really mad, like electric pink hair and big massive like cat headphones on, and they're wearing like a TikTok, like you know, like the white tennis skirt with like fishnet stockings, and they're just wild. And he's watching them come through the library and watching them leave, and he's wondering like why they came, what point their book or their life would start in a novel. He's wondering like what's made them exist on this earth, because he believes that he only exists to kind of see other people's stories. But then all of a sudden, I think in the library, something starts to happen. What starts to happen though? What happens in Paul's life that makes him the protagonist of this book? I don't want to go the whole route of like he's people watching like you, and he gets a bit intense. I don't think that's him. I think he's really nice. I think he's just a nice guy. No, he's not a stalker. He's a nice guy. I think what happens is there is a girl. There's a boy at the back of the library who's there every day, and he's another one of those people, like those just people watchers, kind of like Paul. And Paul starts to see a lot of magic in this boy, even though they're very, very, very alike. And he kind of notices the smaller details. So he notices one day that the boy's eyes are kind of rimmed red, that he's been crying. He notices one day that he's texting like quite a lot on his phone, very kind of heavy, and he's breathing heavy, and there's something going on. And he starts to just notice that this boy is struggling. And I think Paul finally finds it in him to reach out and try and be a friend to this young man who's, like, you know, just a little bit younger than Paul, is only maybe first year college, and he can see him going down the path that Paul feels about being unexceptional, about not being anything special. And I think they start to find they just have a really nice friendship through this book, and there's just such a beauty in, like, the mundane living of everything. I think, like, they go to the movies, they laugh, they, you know, like, they're in the supermarket and they start knocking things over, and, like, they're just, there's all these little cute moments, and Paul kind of realizes that, like, oh my god, nothing, like, particularly tragic or successful has to happen. Like, this is the living of it all. And it's just he kind of, like, all of his favorite novels, his favorite moments aren't the plot, it's actually the way they've enriched the character by the end of it. So I think this is just a really nice, like, glimpse and shot in the life of our boy Paul, who meets a guy in the library, and they just kind of realize that life is really nice. And it doesn't have to be exciting. It's just nice.
Okay. You've got a friendship, right? Like, that there is a friendship in it.
Oh my god, that's, like, the vaguest thing. It's like, people are friends in this book, believe it or not.
And there's a library. So that's kind of it. There is a young boy, and the rest is wrong. The rest is wrong.
So, I am nowhere near it.
And I'll explain, like, one, I've read this book twice now. I read it last year and I wanted to cover it on the podcast straight away, but it actually wasn't being released for ages. So I was like, okay, I'll wait. So then when I wanted to cover it again, I was like, one, we weren't recording at the time. And then two, I was like, do you know what? I'm going to wait till I get a chance to reread it because I want to go over it, so it's fresh in my mind. So I've literally just reread it. But anyway, I'll explain why in particular, apart from me liking the book, why I wanted to do it. So in this book, we do have a young boy and his name is Tom. So he is, we're in the UK, can't remember where exactly, but it's kind of, he's in a small town. Like, there's a village, small town, Compton Mallow. There we go. Don't know, is that a fictional place? Is it real? Apologies to anyone from Compton Mallow if you listen to this and it's a real place and you're insulted. Apologies. Should have maybe looked that up. But anyway, Compton Mallow. So it's a really, really, like, I'm talking rural, like, it is small. And he pretty much, it starts off, his first few sentences is him talking about how he's invisible. He has really bad self-esteem. He's very lonely. We get the fact that he's really struggling, and we kind of see why. We find out very quickly that his mom passed away when he was younger. He was in year 8. Now, I don't know how old that is, but he was quite young. And so it's just him and his dad. He doesn't really have contact with his grandparents. So it's a very kind of isolated existence that he has. His friends in school, he doesn't really have any. His only friends are people that he games with. And so we soon realize that he is living, his dad is an alcoholic, and this progressively gets worse as the book goes on. And
what age did you say he is?
So he's GCSE level, so that's, I think, 15 or 16.
15, about 15.
So he's really struggling at home. Money is really big issue. We can kind of see that they are living pretty much on the poverty line. Like, there is very little food ever in the house. They are surviving really on fish fingers and chips and things like that. And just, you can see how unhappy he is with his life. And he can't really talk with his dad, you know. They don't really have a relationship in that sense that he can share what's going on in his life. So there is an incident very early on in the book where his dad is drunk and has a confrontation with Tom and breaks his PlayStation, Xbox. And Tom is devastated, obviously. This was his one communication with other people, and he doesn't know what to do anymore. So this leads him to go to his local library,
And we kind of figure out that he doesn't really tell us specifically, but he goes there because his mom was a big reader. She loved reading. And as soon as kind of he steps mm-hmm. in, he feels this immediate connection with her, which is lovely, you know, because like his dad never talks about his mom. So it's kind of like, this mm-hmm. is one thing I know that she loved, and it's just this immediate connection. So he kind of goes in and is immediate like, oh my God, I don't want anybody looking at me. Of course, they're like, young boy, oh my God. Everyone's looking at him, and he goes up and he kind of, he's trying to have a look around, and the librarian comes up to him and she's like, what do you want? Like, they're very suspicious of him. And mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I'm just looking for books for my mom. And she like picks out all these like romance books for him. Because he was like holding a Sophie Kinsella book. So he just comes out with like these reams, like she gets him to sign up and she's delighted. She's like, oh my God, a new person signing up. Excellent. Mm-hmm. She sends him out and he's like, oh my God, like, thank God I brought my rucksack. Like I would be, he's just like, oh my God. And so anyway, also at this library is Maggie, and she is a 73-year-old badass woman. And she notices Tom.
I knew
I was like, I can't wait to start talking about Maggie. Maggie immediately notices him. Like she is there. I just picture her in tie-dye. I just picture her in these wild outfits. She catches his eye, like he knows that she's staring at him, and he's like, so anyway, she leaves the library and she's going to go get her bus home, and she is mugged. And Tom hears her shouting for help, and he comes running back. The assailant has fled. Like Maggie in that situation immediately like drops to the ground with her purse, like to try and like, you know, they tell you like there's no point trying to fight it off. Drop to the ground in a mugging situation, make your body as heavy as possible. And yeah. She does it like badass woman. Anyway, when Tom comes up, she accidentally punches him in the face. And so what leads to that then is him kind of walking her to the bus stop. She's obviously been mugged. She's no money. He only has £5 in his pocket that was supposed to buy them food for the evening. And he gives it to Maggie. Aww. And she's like, well, you'll have to come to the library next week for me to give it back to you. So what kind of leads is this really unlikely friendship that kind of really grows throughout the book, of kind of Maggie turning into this person that Tom can confide in, and who is one of like his biggest supporter. It's so lovely. It's such a lovely friendship. So nice. Like it's pretty much like he becomes her grandson, she becomes his granny, pretty much that kind of thing. So I mean, he does go back to the library, you know, all that kind of stuff. He gets actually talking to a girl that he has a huge crush on. All that.
Maggie's like, work, bitch.
And she's like,
oh, Maggie's probably like, oh, are you courting? Isn't that what old people say?
Oh, it's so funny. Like, and so anyway, like what happens in the kind of grand scheme of the thing with the library is that the library is then facing being closed down. And Maggie is pretty much like, she's a bit of a Ron as well, because she comes in and she's like, we will be the revolution. We are going to rebel. We're going to riot. Like she full on is like, some of the suggestions, I don't have my Kindle now beside me, but like I highlighted them being like, this is what Nikki would do. Like stage sit in, like all this kind of stuff. I was like, oh yeah. I was like, chain yourself to
the- I do love yeah. a bit of political railing.
Like, absolutely. I was like, this is Nikki. And that is partly why I wanted to do this book. Cause I was like, this is the future of Nikki that I see.
Oh my God, I love it.
So with Maggie, we find out that she is completely isolated. She lives on a very rural farm, like, I can't remember, but it's quite a bit away from the village. So she is pretty much, her only weekly outing is on a Saturday to the library. And even then she kind of talks about, she's in a book club. That's why she goes to the library. She's just sick of all these like older women just talking about their medical complaints. She's like, there's no conversations, do you know? So meeting Tom is like this huge thing for her, and that they get on so well. And so we kind of see that there is something in Maggie's past that doesn't come out until very, very close to the end, that, you know, because she's looking at Tom and she's imagining her son. And we don't learn about her son until very close to the end, mm-hmm. so I'm not going to give it away. But it does kind of delve into motherhood with Maggie a little bit. So they both have their kind of own issues. So it's kind of, yeah, it's just such a lovely friendship. So it's just so nice. But Maggie lives on this farm. She has her sheep. She has her hens. And she's got this ram on loan, Colin, who is completely psychotic. Completely psychotic ram that just absolutely insane. And there's a really funny bit where Colin manages to get loose and she has to go out with Tom on a quad bike and try to lure him back in. Like, it's just, oh. But she's pretty much a badass. She practices martial arts, jujitsu, yoga. Queen. I was like, why am I just seeing Nikki as a granny in this book? The only place where they don't line up is that Maggie eats animals. She eats the farm animals, you know. It's like, that's the only bit, like, my, you know, when Nikki has a farm and she has her lavender sheep and her hens, they will be protected.
They will also be growing senile with me.
Yes. Oh, I can't. Oh, that'll just be great with Emmett. I can't wait. I hope you tell him about this future now.
Oh my God. He'd be trying to, like, I'd leave and I'd have to, like, bring the pig with me.
I'm telling you, I'm never cooking him a Christmas ham again. I swear to God.
Oh my God, never again. Oh, but, my God, never again.
It is, it's just, she is such a badass in this book and I love her. So we kind of see as the book goes on how Maggie encourages Tom to study. He really wants to go to university. His dad is really pressuring him to join the dog food factory. Straight, like, no college, no nothing. You're joining this as soon as your exams are done. And, you know, the fact that he's not able to talk to his dad, that it, you know, he can't talk about his future with him, that his dad won't listen to him. It's really hard reading that and, you know, them trying to find a place to actually communicate by the end of the book. So it is, there's a lot of kind of, you know, deeper stuff in it, in the book, but overall it is such a, like, heartwarming thing. Like, there are some hilarious moments in the book, like, what is it? The sheep go into labor one morning and, like, Tom is there, like, you want me to look at the sheep's vagina? Pretty much.
Oh, the teenage boy traumatizing.
Yeah, she's just like, just lift up their tail and just look and, like, tell me what you see. And he's like,
the what?
And then that proceeds to him having his arm up there, like, trying to help the sheep give birth. So it's hilarious. You know, there are so many, like, really funny bits in the book that I was like, oh,
I wish the cover was more grabbing. I feel like the cover really lets it down.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna request it, and then I kind of saw a few really good reviews about it and was like, do you know what, I'm gonna get it. So I mean, there are, when I read it the second time around, there's a bit of the writing that, you know, when she writes in Tom's narrative, that she kind of says a lot of, like, stuff that they think teenagers say. So it's all like, oh, Maggie's well good. You're like, oh, bothered me the second time around. But I was like, look, it is still a heartwarming kind of story. And yeah. I will say, justice for romance novels, because I loved how she had, like, a teenage boy absolutely loving reading, absolutely loving these romance books. Do you know, he loved it.
You know,
that's something that I think, do you know what, it's something that I think a lot of people look down on, you know, chick lit. And you're like, do you know what,
I was reading Marion Keyes and someone in my inner circle was like, oh, I can't stand that chick lit shit, nothing good happens. And I was like, it's Rachel's Holiday, this deals with an awful lot.
How dare you.
It's actually a very heavy book.
How dare you.
Very fun, heavy book.
No one slanders the queen of our country.
No one does.
No one does that. I'm sorry. Marion Keyes.
No one does.
Patron saint and queen of Ireland. Sorry. Yeah. But, like, so this book just, it just makes you feel really happy as it goes along. Do you know?
What do you give it out of 10?
I'd give it like an 8 out of 10, I'd say. Like, yes. I think some of the writing points, I was like, oh, stop saying like, well, and all this kind of feeling.
Well good.
Well good. And like, you know, but I was like,
oh my God, you know what I'm obsessed with this week? Mm. You know, Gemma Collins, and she's like, I just want to be me. I'm saying it all week. Oh it's God. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like a broken record.
With you and go with God. I'm just like,
I just want to be me. Go with God, go with bitch. God.
But yeah, no, it's a really like for people, like especially for book lovers. I was like, oh yeah, this is nice.
Oh, that was a lovely one to end on, Becca.
I was like, I'm glad I picked that one after your book. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad. We stand.
We got two opposites. Like, they could not be compared in any circumstance.
We should actually check with ourselves before. Like, I couldn't remember that you were doing a dark book. I was like, oh, damn. Thank God I did the library today.
I know. Oh, my God. Imagine if we ended on that note. Be like, yeah, so anyways.
So, yeah.
Bye, guys.
Gosh.
And now we're like, go and hug an OAP in your local library.
Honestly, that's one of the things. Like, Maggie's like, I can't hug anyone anymore. And I'm like... Let me give you a hug. Honestly, she is a mixture of Elizabeth. No. Oh my God. Elizabeth.
Joyce.
There we go. I was like,
yeah.
She's a mixture of Joyce and Ron. She totally is. Oh.
Just the two best.
She's just mixing. I'm sorry.
So good.
How dare you insult Ibrahim? I am an Ibrahim.
I'm not insulting Ibrahim. He is simply third.
I'm sorry.
Ron. Joyce. Ibrahim.
And then Elizabeth. Oh my God, rude.
You can't really put any of them on the bottom. They're all just great. But yeah, Ron is number one. This is, we're going to bring it back to Thursday Murder Club on every single.
Whenever there's an OAP, I'm just like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Can you live up to my face? I'm sorry.
And also,
Maggie needs to be in that club. She would.
Another one now that if anyone wants to read the library, they should also read Thursday Murder Club. But like I reviewed a book last year called Good Eggs.
Mm.
And there's that girl, Millie Goggin. I think. Yeah. And like, oh my God, she's fucking hysterical. She's so funny. She's like 80 years old cycling on a little bike and like breaking out of her nursing home. And like, oh my God, honestly, you'd love that book as well.
OAPs. In a book is my favorite trope. As soon as there is an OAP in there, I'm like, and they're lovable. I'm just like, sign me up.
Oh, the really scatty, delusional, hilarious OAP that just lives like the beat of their own drum. It's just, there's nothing more endearing.
They've gotten to a stage where they're like, I don't care what anybody thinks. Like Maggie full on drives her tractor into the middle of town. Like she drives it to pick Tom up one day.
This is like Millie Goggin in Good Eggs. And she like, she should not legally be driving and she still does.
Oh,
she's dangerous. Crashing into everything. I know, it's so bad. But this was such a nice episode.
Apart from the edited bit that I have to take out about what you were telling me. I was like,
yeah, I know. My book goes there. Oh, Grim Readers, it has been fun.
It has. And
we shall see you soon. Hopefully. I'd say all of these are all going to come out and like it's going to look very consistent despite the fact that our recording is not consistent.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm going to have to force ourselves to be more consistent. Yeah. Be like, yeah. But anyway, until next time. Bye.
Follow us on Twitter and Goodreads and Instagram.
And Storygraph. Oh my God. You forgot one.
And Storygraph.